and welcome to episode 243 of the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where the small press makes one hell of a big noise. I'm Vince Hunt, creator of the upcoming Indigo Park, and joining me this week are the creator of Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
And the latest release from Full Moon Studios, Tony Esmond.
Oh, we had a talk about Puppet Master this week, didn't we? You were trying to say, what should we do to draw? And I said, let's do the puppets from Puppet Master fucking each other.
That took a long time for the show to just go out the window, didn't it?
Joining us.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Thankfully, bringing us back to a normal show. This week, we're joined by writers, podcasters, co-creators of El Marvo, and the epic tag team known as Hawk and Cleaver. It's Luke Condor and Ben Errington. Hello.
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 Have you guys done an episode or podcast on the Puppet Master series?
No, yeah. Not yet. Oh, yeah. I really want to watch the new one. The one written by...
Oh, my God.
That what's his flavour?
I watched The Brood yesterday, and I put it as worse than The Brood.
Oh, no.
I wouldn't even describe it on air. Right? And now I say most things. Do you know what I mean?
It's The Littlest Reich. The Littlest Reich.
Yeah, The Littlest Reich.
Yeah. There's an interesting way that a lady gives birth. Put it that way.
I can only imagine.
My interest.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the show. Yes, we are joined by not one, but two guests, and we're going to be talking about all things writing, prose, comics, maybe some Kickstarters. What it's like to actually work with a sexual Tyrannosaurus like Dan Butcher, and more.
You'd know that, V.
Yep. What a true believers that was.
Gave me the finger guns and made a certain comment, which we might say after the credits later on Friday in the Starbucks. You remember?
No.
He said, never go. And then you pointed at me. I went, you remember?
No.
Yeah, it's kind of slightly coming back.
Oh, God.
He just went, looked at me, did a finger gun, winked and went, never go bareback.
Oh,
a large portion of the conversation was about the aforementioned topic. The kind of standard Starbucks talk.
Yes. Starbucks.
I wasn't actually there for that conversation, as you can tell.
It was a classic.
What are you two like when I'm not there to sort of babysit you?
It's awful.
And I gave him an amazing comic. He's going to talk
about
it.
Yeah, I can review it later.
That's nice.
Almost like a precautionary tale.
My word. Well, there's no caution needed for our sponsors. Yes.
Hey.
Segway.
Yeah, thank you. No caution, but very much we encourage you to check out Comic House, our sponsor, and the indie comic marketplace with a difference, and very patient because they put up with us.
Yep.
If you go on to comichouse.com, there's a huge selection of titles on the database. People are selling hard copies of their books. If you want another avenue of self-publishing and selling your books, and you can list your book on there for free and start selling straight away. But they also have an app that we harp on about every week, and we read every week. Or if you're like me, you save it up for a couple of weeks and then you have a bit of a reading binge.
Yeah, always have a look.
Yeah, which is kind of what I do with a lot of digital books, actually. Even when I buy them week on week, I still have like a to-read pile. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Tony will never finish his to-read pile because he...
Mine's up the street.
Yeah.
But it's difficult with digital because, like, at least with a physical book, it takes up space and presence, whereas the digitals are so easy to forget about.
Yeah. Once you get, like, three lines back, you can't actually see what they are unless you sort of sweep back. So you sort of concentrate on the new one. Because I subscribe to about three
lines.
Books. Yeah.
Bloody hell.
You're on a fire, though, aren't you? Is that how you read yours normally?
I'm always on fire, baby.
Yeah, baby. The...
Well, no, I read... I mean, I've got a Kindle Fire, but a lot of the time I'm usually, if I'm reading Comixology, a lot of it's on my phone actually. We're with the with the actual sort of
guided view,
yeah, panel by panel. But that's just like when I'm traveling or things like that, it's just a bit easier. And also, Kindles, after about a month, they just start breaking down on you.
They do, they're a bit slow, aren't they? Yeah, sometimes. Yeah, I tried one for a while because it was like a cheaper, you wouldn't worry about putting it in your bag and that. And I know what you mean,
But anyway, enough about our tech stuff. Back to our sponsor. Yes, they have lots of stuff on their database, which is getting bigger all the time. What stuff have they got on there at the moment, Dan?
We've got Bertie Baron and the Dagger of 1,000 Souls by Andy W. Clift. Vanguard 17, that's on there now. North Star Volume 1, Long Road Back Volume 1, Unseen Shadows, Blood Cries Out, and Blood Brothers Volume 1, Issue 2.
Okay.
So there's a new influx
of
titles.
They're all new. Yeah, they all came on today, I think, didn't they? Yeah, I've got a feeling.
Did you say one was called North Star?
Yes. Okay. Two R's.
I've just thought about a topic that we'll talk about in just a second.
I'll kick us off.
Yes, so there's all of that and more. It's not really like Netflix when whenever you want to watch something, you go to search for it and it's never there.
Yeah, I love that.
Yep.
It'll be like Amazon when it advertises a comic, you click on it and say, oh, you can't actually read this on here. But
you can buy it.
And
it's like, oh,
yeah.
God.
Oh, fuck off.
I'll say I'm forget to do that.
But yeah, on Comic House, there's just loads of great comics. So it's a subscription service like Netflix. So there's a 14-day free trial. It's only £3 a month, which is the cost of probably a digital comic these days as well.
You get
access to all of that and more. So go to comichouse.com and find out more today.
Good.
One day, that's our smoothest one ever. Yeah, one day we'll get into this sort of realm of sort of saying when you quote code blah blah, you know, awesome at checkout. Do you think we'll probably sell out?
Yeah, it's a good idea.
Yeah,
we'd do anything for money.
Yeah.
Do you chaps use Kindles or?
I went through a phase of pretty much only, when I lived in London, I didn't have much space, so I only read digital. But since then, I've got a couple of bookshelves that I love filling it up with physical. Books now, so I'm pretty much exclusively physical at the minute.
Okay.
What about Ben?
Yeah, so I mostly physical stuff, I'd say. I do a lot of audiobooks as well these days.
If you're driving a lot, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, for driving, for like even I'm just sitting at work and various other things editing. Yeah. I quite like having an audiobook going away. In terms of like Kindle, I did go for a brief phase, but I just found, as I said, I found myself forgetting about stuff and not finishing stuff as well. So it's good to have that physical copy that I can just see, you know.
Yeah.
Talking about audiobooks, you guys have done some audio dramatizations of some of your work, haven't you? That's right.
Yeah. Well, it's pretty much like our main thing that we do is like audio stories.
Yeah.
We didn't mean to. We did a few and then they did quite well. And then you always sort of get trapped by your successes. So we just have to keep doing it now.
Tell me about this again.
Go on.
Getting the audio book, like there's a couple books I've read and had the audio of. For me, it's completely different experiences. Mm. It's still good. Yeah. Like I've read Dune a couple of times and then I've listened to the audio book a couple of times and I've got different things from different ones.
It depends what the quality of the person. There's that sort of generic American bloke who reads a lot of stuff, and that kind of puts me off. But if it's someone I can sort of engage, we were talking about one the other day, and it's sort of an actress who plays it almost, and I kind of dig that a bit more. Yeah. I think. Yeah.
The narrator's that a lot. Go on, Ben.
I listen to a lot of autobiographies. It's really strange when it's not the person who's written.
Yeah, exactly.
Who's narrating it? That's really strange. That's a bit off-putting. But apart from that, as long as the performance is good, then.
I started listening to a Frankie Boyle one and it wasn't him and I couldn't get on with it.
It's not the same, is it? He's a performer, isn't he? You're used to the sort of the way he works, especially with a comedian, you know.
If you listen to I'm Alan Partridge and it's Steve Coogan, it's like a whole different experience. Oh, yeah. It's fucking cold.
That is one of his books that I listened to and read. So I think I read it first and then I found out it was an audiobook. I had to listen to it and I was like, I wish I kind of did this first because... It adds so much. It's hilarious.
The one that we always quote is the Pat Mills "Be Pure, Be Vigilant, Behave: The History of 2000 AD" book, and that would not be the same if it wasn't him, because he's quite emotional. You know, he's quite sort of you know, he knows what he's talking about and he adds emphasis. And it wouldn't be the same if it wasn't him.
But also, there's the one about like the Marvel. I've forgotten the name of it now. The one we talked
about. Slugfest.
Not Slugfest. Slugfest is
Sean Howell one. The History of Marvel. Yeah.
The History of Marvel. Even though that's not him narrating, that's the right kind of narrator for that kind of book.
There's the Grant. I was listening to the Grant Morrison one. Whatever the book is, did about
super gods or super gods.
And that is really off putting because it's not like a Scotsman doing it. You know, it's like it's a strange one. When you get an American doing not only an Englishman or a British person, but a Scotsman, that's sort of I find that slightly strange.
And when they can't do an accent, it'll just take you completely out of the book.
We should do a little talking book.
What would it be about?
You.
I like that note of resignation in your voice there.
he knew it was going to be about him and his sexual antics.
It'd be like Jackie Collins meets the Beano.
Jesus.
Oh, wow.
History of Fingering by Vince Hunt.
Oh, God. Dude. Really?
Yeah, that'd be good.
That's volume two.
I'd buy it.
Anyway, when we were talking about the Comic House list, I just suddenly had a thought of a topic. There was a book there called North Star.
Mm.
And yeah. When people hear that name, they probably think of maybe one of a more mainstream character called that.
Yeah.
Alpha Flight. Or Fist of the North Star.
And it just led me to suddenly think, there's a lot of independent books, like especially small press ones, and Dan will know this as well, like that the title of the book is the title of the character, which is what it is, but what happens when your character has the same name as something that's in the big two? How does that affect your character? I think, obviously, Vanguard, you've had a couple of name.
I would honestly, if I could go back in time and tell myself to change the name, I would have done that like in a heartbeat. Really, I think you should completely.
Is that purely because of the issues you've had with people?
Well, you've got the Eric Larson book, but yeah, there's an old. Is it Pacific Comics did a book called Vanguard? It's like an anthology thing as well, didn't they?
There's a Marvel, the Russian superheroes. Vanguard. You got like there's a, an African news network called Vanguard. There's a Japanese card game called Card Captor Vanguard. I think if you want a name that sticks out but is individual to what your
what would you call it, Dan, if you could go back?
It's a good question. I've never actually thought of that.
Butcher.
The best webcomic.
Well, that's the reason Aardvark Vanaheim is called Aardvark Vanaheim, because it becomes at the start of the fucking directory. Because it's double A, isn't it? Yeah. But the thing is with you guys is you've called it El Marvo. Has there ever been a misapprehension that's a Marvel title?
The only reason we called it El Marvo is because Ben's mate called Marvin. Is that right, Ben?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah. that is correct.
That's cool.
So when I came up for the concept of this, like I used to draw like all my classmates and stuff, like as like caricatures and things. And right. I started toying with the idea of this character, and it was because his name was Marvin, I called him El Marvo. But I think anyone who kind of does get mixed up and think is a Marvel title are like the most casual of comic fans ever. Yeah. They kind of hear the Marv bit and they go, oh, is that like involved in like all the Marvel comics and stuff? Like
someone said to us, oh, is that Iron Man? And I said, no.
Yeah, that's true. That's literally because of the red color scheme.
Yeah.
Mention, he'd just punch him straight.
It's weird that like just those color schemes.
Iron Man? Yes.
Those color schemes are so indicative of like the characters that people make that jump. It's fucking Well, there you go.
Yeah.
I think the thing is that people are stupid. I believe that is the phrase we're looking at.
Well.
Yeah. The thing is, there are so many like Lucha comic characters as well.
There seems to have been quite a few wrestling comics recently. I'm not saying since yours come out, actually. Since El Marvo 1's come out, we've seen a couple.
Yeah.
We've got Legend of Mariposa, but it's a different take, isn't it? Like,
yeah, different. You've got what's the one that Josh Hicks does?
There's that Blood Brothers that's just come out on Comic House. I think that's a Luchador comic, right?
Okay.
Sort of like a Luchador detective thing, anyway.
Okay, you got Wrestling Federation. I think there's a Hellboy Luchador comic, isn't there? Which is very good.
There's
a couple of members of the BPRD who are like Luchador wrestlers.
Corbin
draws it, I think. Yeah, it's good stuff.
Even like small press stuff and stuff that I've seen on Kickstarter has got some similarities to it. So obviously, Atomic Hercules, which is just been funded. I think that's been funded now, isn't it?
Yeah, we did all right.
Yeah,
But yeah, I mean, there are similarities in various other little things between. I think that's the kind of thing when you're trying to build a world like this that kind of draws from pop culture that already exists. So you know, obviously, we've drawn from Mad Max, Fallout, stuff like that. With Atomic Hercules, I saw some similarities between those pockets of pop culture as well.
Right.
I think that's kind of it, isn't it? If there are similarities, you could. Well, I think you find it.
Hercules is based on an old comic from the 70s, so that's kind of where we got that one.
Can you give us the pitch for Marvo? Like, if someone said, walked up to the table and said, "Hey, you crazy cats, what's this comic? What's this comic about Iron Man?"
Okay, well, so Iron Man / the Marvel ripoff comic. Were you going to say something, Luke?
Yeah.
Iron Man's not in it, unfortunately.
This is going well so far. I'm enjoying this bit.
It's about a luchador wrestler who wakes up in a post-apocalyptic future, fights mutants, and an evil dictator called Socrates. That's pretty much the gist of it. So, I mean, it's a genre in itself. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know, we've always kind of liked sort of gonzo takes on genres and bizarro themes and that kind of thing. So I just really enjoyed the mashing of culture, different references and that kind of thing. And making something quite, I think when you read it, it is a blend of a lot of things. And I think it's quite fun. I like that we can sort of do whatever the hell we want in it.
It's fun, it's totally absurd. And I think that's the thing I like about it. It's a world where we think literally anything we want could exist in this world in some way, and we don't particularly need to explain it. Yeah. It's that absurd that we can just go, right, well, now we've got steampunk dinosaurs in there, and we've got mind-controlled mecha Greek statues, and we're just going, right, well, there they are. They exist in this world. We're not really going to explain why or how, but there we go. Talking warts, yeah.
I've never drawn dinosaurs in a comic. Well, I'm doing steampunk ones now. But, yeah. It's
well,
great.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
I mean, how did El Marvo sort of like come to be? Because a lot of people will know you guys predominantly from, like, you know, obviously the podcasting and writing prose and stuff, which is your first one. But El Marvo is your first step into like the comic book world, isn't it?
So,
you know, what was your background with comics, and then how did that lead to El Marvo himself?
Well, I mean, I've always loved comics. It's like, it's pretty much first love, really. Grew up reading a lot of comics, and it was just so difficult to get into because I'm really shit at drawing, and I feel like unless you can draw, you need to get someone else to do it. You can't just get someone to draw for you for free. Like, you need some money. Whereas prose, you can just sit down and either write or not. It's kind of up to you to either get down and do it or not. And so prose is just the sort of the route I took. But Ben can draw. So Ben actually made his own comic books.
Oh, really?
That's the first like iteration of it. I think when Hawk and Cleaver started, I always wanted to make a comic book. That was the thing, like a first official real released comic book. So even though we did prose, we did podcasts, it was always kind of like something in the back of my mind that, right, okay, eventually I'd like to do a comic, and I want to do like a collaborative comic book as well, not something where I'm just going to be doing, you know, everything. I wanted to collaborate with people and sort of knock these ideas around that I'd had for years and put it together in that way. It was an idea, it was a concept that I'd had that I'd kind of like really, really changed over the years, and I kind of just approached Luke with it, probably knowing how he could bring absurd elements to life. And perhaps I couldn't do that so much, so it was good to collaborate with him and knock those ideas back and forth. And we just started building the world, I guess, for something that, as Luke says, when I drew these comics, it was a really rudimentary, something like hand-drawn stuff, really brightly coloured felt-tip pens, double-sided sticky tape stuff. I was probably like 13, 14 when I first did it.
They're really quite impressive. I think you're underselling them, Ben, because, like, I mean, you were really young. You made these like fully finished-looking comic books out of your own, I guess,
pencil case.
That's
more than I've done. That's really good.
but this was the thing, because I wanted to like create an original property. It was almost like I wasn't fully dialing into one thing or another. I wasn't fully dialing into the writing of the comics. I really did just start almost making them up as I go along and or seat of the pants writing stuff, but with a comic book, which probably seems a bit crazy. But that was kind of what I did, and because I wanted to create an original property, I did what I knew best, and I just ripped loads of stuff off.
Yeah.
So. It was pretty much like I was a huge Marvel fan growing up, so they're like the real mainstream Marvel stuff, so I was ripping off stuff left, right, and center. And it was only now that I look back at it that I think, If only I put a little bit more effort into sort of designing original characters or writing original scripts, it probably would have been a lot better than it was. But taking the real, real basic elements of that, which are created, you know, over 15 years ago now, taking the real basic elements of that, I kind of just approached Luke and explained what I wanted this to suddenly be, and then it became something, a completely different beast. So yeah, like with the post-apocalyptic future and all the luchador wrestler elements and the absurd nature of like a of an apocalyptic wasteland with mutants and various other villains.
Did you two guys know each other from school then? Is that how did you two guys meet?
No, so I was doing a different podcast 2015, I think, where I was making short films and publishing short stories on Amazon and that kind of thing, and sort of like journaling it all. I did something called a 7-day story challenge where on the Monday I'd say I'm going to make a short film in a week and I'm going to document it as I go. I did a few of them on my own, and then Ben sent me an email and said he'd like to give it a go. So he came on my show to do a short story. And then we just kind of, I think we're quite similar people. I mean, we're both balding. And as soon as we noticed that about each other, it was like, well, let's just hang out.
Yeah.
But he was in Bristol. Yeah. I was in London at the time. And we just, I don't know, we sort of built a little company around that, made lots of friends across the country doing similar things. And
I think that's how Hawk and Cleaver began, isn't it? Like off the back of that, that's how we created Hawk and Cleaver, is that we realized we had a similar outlook, similar mindset on the creative process. Yeah. Luke knew a couple of other guys who might want to be involved. So that's how Hawk and Cleaver started. It was just four of us, four of like-minded guys. And now it's like a much bigger sort of network of creative people.
Yeah.
So that's how it began. Yeah. So I didn't even know him. I used to listen to his podcast like every week, and I'd been writing for a while, but I never like had the know-how to like actually publish something. And it was listening to these people on Luke's podcast, like, approach him and pitch different ideas and then basically finish them within a week. So that kind of inspired me, I guess, to try and do that myself. And that was why I just used to pick Luke's brains in those first like few months. I used to just ask him all these questions and thinking he was some sort of oracle. Sorry, Luke.
Yeah, that's fine.
So are you co-located? Do you live near each other now, or is it still a long distance relationship?
Yeah, I live back in my hometown now. I'm in, near Mansfield, which is like 45 minutes out from Nottingham.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So when we met, because the first time we met was in Wimbledon, wasn't it? So that's quite a distance for you guys.
Yeah, it's quite a bit.
I think I was in Manchester at the time. Yeah.
Yeah, I remember you telling me now. Yeah, yeah. So it was kind of the early days then with that, of Hawk and Cleaver, when you did Wimbledon. Am I right?
No. When was that? So
it
we started
Hawk
and Cleaver
4 years ago, isn't it? Surely something like that, I reckon.
That seems
We had El Marvo issue 1 published, and that was published sort of like in 2017.
Yeah.
So I think it may have been 2018 or maybe the tail end of 2017.
Yeah, I think it was just for Christmas 17, wasn't it? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's gone quick,
hasn't it?
Luminac.
How did you get into? Because Will Simpson did the covers for both issues, the new one and the old one. Is that right? Or
Will Robson.
Is he doing the new one? Will.
Robson. Will Robson.
Robson. Yeah. Pardon me. Yeah. Sorry, Will Robson. Yeah. Yeah. How did that come about?
He was just starting to work for Marvel, I think. So.
Yeah.
And as we've said,
I remember meeting him at London Film Comic Con, and I think I met you guys there as well. Because I think I don't think I introduced myself. I was quite nervous about meeting people. But I remember
Super Comic Con or Film and Comic Con.
One at the Excel Center.
Oh, the Super Comic Con. Yeah.
So Dan had his Vince gave me Dan's sketchbook and said it's very good.
Yeah, I have a free one. Don't
look
worry
at that,
about
salesman, baby, yeah. Salesman.
Yeah. And that was what. 3 years ago. I don't know. I have no idea. No concept of time anymore. Yeah.
So was that the first time you saw Dan's work?
No, I don't think so. Because I've been reading Vanguard for a while. I've always been a fan of Dan's Vanguard comic. I've always thought his art is obviously fantastic and it's gotten better over time. But his storytelling, I mean, we call ourselves writers, but Dan is a cracking storyteller.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Head swelling up here.
Oh yeah.
Well, he's not all that.
I love writing. I love this sort of telling story and
kind of like getting readers' hopes up and dashing them, and yeah, it's just fantastic.
You write quite deep storylines as well, Dan. It's very layered, very political, very dark, and yeah. When I hear the childish humour that you spout when we're face to face,
I'm mostly disgusted.
Yeah, you know.
Yeah, put it all into the writing.
Yeah.
Dan is remarkably well read.
Yeah,
that's the thing I always know about Dan, is he is very well read. And you mentioned
he read Dune three times, did you say?
Yeah. That's all he reads, just that. Yeah. And I see that in your writing, man. I see the political stuff, because you read a lot of political stuff as well, you know.
Yeah, I try to kind of. We're not trying to go either way on it, just trying to get a good read of.
Yeah.
I like kind of. It's tricky to get characters who have. They say they're doing one thing, but they're actually doing another. And I find that's a real art to doing it. And reading through Frank Herbert's stuff again, he's an absolute fucking master of it. You can tell, like, although they're saying something, they mean something different. And there's a lot of layers to the characters. And I find when people do that, it's absolutely fascinating.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Especially like the political machinations, like you get in stuff like the early Games of Thrones series.
When it was good, you mean?
Yeah, when it was good. Yeah. And it's great. I really like it.
What Frank Herbert book are you reading at the moment, Dan? Did you say?
I've actually not read all the Dune series. So I've just finished God Emperor of Dune. And
That four? Is that four? Isn't it?
That's four.
And yeah, that's good.
Just ordered five. It's given me a couple of ideas how to. I was on a sort of knife edge how to end with the end of Vanguard when it comes up. I was not
hold
sure.
Hold on. Did you just say the end of Vanguard?
It is going to end at a point.
Yeah.
I'm looking to finish it at some point. Not anytime soon, because I've still got a fair bit of story to kind of cover, but it's kind of made me think, I might go for that ending. There's about two or three endings.
Oh, nice.
But you guys, so for instance, if you're writing a story, you kind of got an idea where it's going to end up, or... You know, I said that advice about try and work towards the ending, but at the moment I've only got a vague ending. So, you know, you kind of aim towards that.
Yeah, it depends.
I think
on
a vague ending
well.
Is as good as any, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's different as well. Obviously, if you guys are like writing a book, you have to work towards that ending because every single step's towards it. But if I'm writing a comic and it's taking me 10 years, the series, by the time I get to the last issue where it's going to be. The person I was when I started writing it and the artist I was is completely different to the one that's going to finish it.
And I think
that's going to be fantastic, though, to look back through that 10 years' worth of work and see Dan Butcher becoming Dan Butcher.
Every better.
Oh, my
it's
God.
It's a weird thing, the ending, though, because the ending is a construct of fiction, isn't it? You look at everything else in the world, there's no real ending to it, isn't it? So we have this sort of almost falsified construct that is the end to something. Mm, and you can tell whether it's done well or not, because it needs to be sort of, you know, lent on early, you know.
Mm. I think as well sometimes, like, when people say, oh, you need to know the ending, like, before you start. And I think that within reason that's true. But that doesn't necessarily mean that, for instance, you're starting a series and it's going to be a series of arcs. You know, you've got these great characters and you want to take them on this journey. I think you may just know the ending of that first arc.
Yeah.
And, you know, as long as you know the beginning, middle and end of that first arc, because by the end of that first arc, who knows how the characters and story will have changed. And, you know, by the end of that first arc, when you probably take a break before doing the second one, it becomes a different beast, doesn't it? So, but you know, if you're telling a one and done story, then yeah, you got to know it all. But I think if you're talking a longer game, I think to focus on arcs is probably the better thing to do, because if you think, oh, I mean, we always say don't say you're going to write 70 issues, but just sort of say. You think, oh well, I'm going to end with this thing on issue 65. If you say that now before you've even started issue one, that idea of issue 60, you know, by the time you get to that, if you ever make it to that, you probably won't like that idea as much, because everything will have changed before then and evolved. And
it's what changed in comics with the miniseries, isn't it? Before that, comics would just run and run. So Spider-Man doesn't really have a designated ending unless someone's keeping it a secret from him. You know, there's no designated ending to Superman. But when you started getting miniseries like... you know, Secret Wars and all this sort of thing, then suddenly you had an end to a series.
Yeah,
it was a weird one, and it's only accelerated that, especially in indie and small press. Is they're written for that reason, aren't they? Sometimes.
And the end of one story informs the next, doesn't it? I mean, if you're talking about like those Spider-Man,
it's a soap opera, isn't it?
Yeah, you'd have an issue, or maybe the most would be two issues, wouldn't it? You'd have a two-parter. By the end of that two-parter, something major might have happened, which will then inform what happens in the next.
There'll be a shadow in the background in the end of the second. You know, there's all this sort of thing going on, isn't there? The typical sort of Claremont writing style. Yeah.
There is a lot of stuff like when you've written a story for a beginning, middle, and end, but you also want to leave enough open for if it's enjoyed enough, you can add more to it. Because some stories, they're like every character arc sewn up. There's nowhere really to take this. And if you carry on, you feel like you're just like a cash-in almost.
I kind of miss that a bit in comics, though, man. Because, like, people say to me, oh, where should I start reading Spider-Man? And I'm like, well, you don't ask that about Coronation Street or something, do you?
No, you just get
whatever
stuck
the
in.
Episode is, you know, just jump on and enjoy it. I don't think there's a combination of the collector mentality and the sort of the fact that people are used to box sets now. They think it's got to have a beginning and an end, and it doesn't necessarily have to.
Yes, with series like that, you don't kind of really need. You just jump in anywhere.
What's your mindset with El Marvo then, guys? Is it one and done stories? You know, for people that are probably going to be interested in this.
Well, you know. I think you hit the nail on the head with the with telling an arc with an option to do more if people are interested or if we've got more stories to tell after that. We know sort of where this arc's going to end, and we sort of know the up and down of it, but we don't want to. End on a note that's going to not give us any room to do more. We do want to tell an end of sorts.
I think it's a universe that various characters could have much more interesting stories to tell, and we're trying to flesh out this world that is, you know, vastly populated by interesting characters that we're kind of introducing slowly. So, you know, while some character arcs might be wrapped up and we might not have to revisit those characters ever again, some characters may go off on new adventures and we want to follow them for another, you know, another four or five parts or something. So we haven't given it a definitive ending, but I think we'll know once we get somewhere like that.
We write a lot of stuff, and I feel like El Marvo has been maybe the most sort of fluid. I mean, I have not, normally I'm quite, I'll write all the plot details down of what I'm going to work on, if it's a novel or something like that. But with El Marvo, I've kind of bit loosey-goosey with it, and I'm kind of enjoying that freedom to sort of take a little sojourn.
I think that's part of what I mentioned before, like the absurd nation of the world, is that like when we go on to the next scene, we go, right, okay, well, here's the next scene and here's what's going to happen in this scene, and we go, yeah, okay, we don't like overthink it too much. It's not like we're going, should this exist in this world, should these characters be doing this or saying this. We kind of do just go. It's sort of like pinballing around in terms of a story, even though we write a fairly loose sort of plot for particular issues. We do try and take it in lots of different directions.
It's also a kinetic action book as well, isn't it? So there's none of this sort of sitting there wistfully looking into the sunset for four pages.
I mean, we've got a bit of that. You say that. Yeah. I think there is a page where a character sits and looks into the sunset.
But we've got a page, like. You're not wasting four pages. I mean, I'm sure after that page, someone probably gets their head ripped off, or I don't know, the T-Rex just appears from nowhere.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of that.
All projects, you know, are different and different types of planning, you know, aids them in different ways. So the other comic book I've written is it's 30 pages long, and it is like a lyrical sort of beat poem of a book, and that's going to do its thing, and that needed a bit of planning and needed a definitive finish. Whereas you're right, El Marvo is kind of like a Saturday morning cartoon, but people get blown up. Like, it's just a fun, insane book.
I mean, that's a really good description. Yeah. I don't know, we've not used that before, Luke. Jesus.
Blown up.
I'm just making a
Kickstarter. So what's the other book you've done, Luke? Sorry.
We're still just putting the pitch package together. We're doing it with Rory Donald.
Nice.
It's a post-apocalyptic. I can't seem to stop doing post-apocalyptic stuff. Post-apocalyptic beatnik bizarro book about two mutants on the road to find the end of the world, and it's sort of a sweet book about people finding out that there is no end. Not really. Things change, but it just keeps on going. You just sort of have to become comfortable with that.
So, has the process started on that one? Have you started drawing?
Rory's done the first four pages and he's done a cover.
Right.
It's been scripted for this story. I've had this story in my head for ages. I think I've always wanted to do something sort of beat related because I used to read a lot of like Jack Kerouac and that kind of thing. But I wanted to do a bit more of a genre spin on it. So Rory, as soon as I saw his art style, I thought this guy probably can do this justice because he's got such a sort of a fluid, lovely style, yeah. Sort of, and he was able to take some of the concepts and put them on paper so well.
It also helps that he's just super nice.
Oh yeah.
He's the indie world's Mignola. That's how I always describe him.
Yeah,
that's a good shout. Yeah.
So we're pitching that at the minute. I mean, I'm sending that to some publishers. I'm not in any rush to get that done. It's a, you know, it's a project of love and just something I'll be working on. Have been for a few years, and we'll probably work on it for another few years, and that's fine.
There's a group on Facebook like connecting comic book and artists, and everyone on there seems to. I can't pay any money, but we're going to pitch this through Image. And it's like, okay.
Oh, good. Yeah, that's good. Yeah.
Good luck with that.
Image famously, who don't pay up front to people who aren't known creators. Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, well, that's a good idea. Exactly. Yeah. Image are essentially. They will publish the book. It's not for them to pay all of your fees.
Apparently they give a little bit of money to people who are faces. That's what I've heard recently. But I think I think
it's almost to entice those faces to come to Image now. Because there's so many, you know, with the likes of Vault, Aftershock, you know, everything popping up. These people can take their pick, can't they? So
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Mm. Yeah, but I know what you mean, Dan. Is everyone's I know what you mean.
Trying to be the next best-selling comic, but don't want to put any skin in the game.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like kind of the Kickstarter route is if it's ideal for kicking off your business or your comic idea. If you kind of want to test the water, you kind of get a few pages. I think we did that on El Marvo 1. We just had the five initial pages of that, right? Or was it even that?
Exactly. Yeah, I think it was five pages. Yeah, Kickstarter's the third biggest publisher of comics. If you count it as a publisher, which is sort of it is, it's the third biggest in the world behind Marvel and DC.
They're huge in the comics world. They're involved in LCAF now, and that's the reason because they deal with so many indie and small press books now.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. Because didn't we on the first time, Marvel, like you said, it's a couple of pages. You give people the pitch, some art, and then away you go. And the Kickstarter for Marvel 2 should be starting the day after this podcast comes out.
The comic book Kickstarter community because it feels it's less like asking your mum and dad to sort of
it's a pre-order system
exactly
but also there's very much sort of well like all books you could say but there's very much people pledge on a Kickstarter then you got to deliver it and I mean obviously deliver it in terms of you know actually get the book out there so you got to have a reliable team that can put it together well and then people get their books when they're expected to get their books or even if there's a bit of a delay keep the communication we've talked about having delays for a couple of years on stuff but there's also that you have to deliver on the quality of your story, of your book, because it's much like a first issue to a second issue on the stands. The same goes for Kickstarter. If your first issue doesn't hold up, not so many people go back for the second issue, and you do see the law of diminishing returns. You know, people think it's an easy go-to because they just scraped through and funded their first issue. Of course they're going to get the second issue. That isn't all, and then they wonder why.
Well, there's a notorious drop-off for every second issue ever in the history of the world, isn't there? That's the problem.
Unless you get a good word of mouth on your first issue and it builds up. So, like,
I think the trick is, as well, is to give the first issue away with the second issue. So then you can build up on new people. Otherwise, you're just preying on the people you've had in the first one, you know?
I think that's kind of what we've done with this new Kickstarter campaign. Initially, we were just going to do the second issue and just pitch it as that. Here's the Kickstarter for the second issue, but this one we've kind of done as it's issue one and two. So we're trying to get obviously the people who were in there with issue one back, but we're also trying to get a new audience as well. Mm. So you know, if people come in and they see that there's two issues, and that's quite a nice chunk of story to be able to pledge for. So yeah.
Because
I always felt like if you kind of got the digital version for issue one, and that's been out for a couple of years, and everyone's going to read it, it's going to read it, and then you go to two, and then you say, well, you're going to get this as well. That can only be a bonus in my eyes, because that will swing people around, because rather than jump in the two, they've got one as this more bang for your buck.
Yeah.
But one of the things I've done with you guys, I think we messed up last time. I was doing like PDFs of how far along was along of like making the comic, but I was saving them over the top of the old one, and I don't think we kept them. Yeah. But this time I've done like a digital flat plan, and every time I update elements, I send you a new version. I've kept them myself, so you can see.
That's sweet. That's cool.
Well, I think we cracked along quite long already with it. I think we was going to wait until the Kickstarter sort of was successful, but I've already started drawing.
Yeah, that's what we did last way there, time, isn't
it? Yeah, I think
Dan, we did say just do 4 or 5 pages for the campaign, but you've sped ahead.
I think that speaks to the fact that like Dan wouldn't do it if he wasn't enjoying it. If he wasn't
plus, it saves the stress of worrying about it once it's funded. You know.
Yeah,
I think that's the way I look at it.
I'd like to think it is going to get funded, so I'm putting my eggs in the basket.
Yeah, I'm 101% sure that'll get funded. Oh, yeah. Same as the one I've just done. We had it drawn before we even launched, you know, because you kind of know, don't you? You kind of got an idea. It's not, as long as you're not going mental with the amount.
Yeah, if you're sensible with what you're asking for, then... Yeah.
Some people go crazy. I've seen a couple recently, you know, we send messages backwards and forwards amongst a small press, and a couple got sent to me recently. I'm like, really? How much? You know,
You say that, but then when they do fund, it's like, oh, well.
Fine. Yeah, but I'm always suspicious. suspicious that they've got like 43 backers, and they seem to have managed to, you know, get grand. Yeah. And then six grand by their mum, you know.
We had a backer last time who pledged £300, which is insane. But then his card got declined. So to everyone else, it looked like we'd made a lot more money than we actually had. His card got declined. And he just ghosted us, which is fine. I mean, if you can't pay for it, don't worry. But I wish he just didn't pledge in the first place.
Yeah.
Because he pushed us over these stretch goals, and then we didn't have the money to actually do them. So,
we've had ones where people pledge, withdraw, pledge, withdraw, pledge, withdraw. There's some kind of weird algorithm going on with some bot somewhere that just does that. And you think, oh, I'm over the limit. No, I'm not. Oh, I'm over the limit. It's like that. It fucking does your edit. Yeah. I'll tell you what's good as well is because you can tell who your true friends are. Because if you're running a Kickstarter, you can check to see who's pledged.
That's true. That is true. Yeah. I've definitely
one of the things
that.
I've found different working with like a whole script now, which I've done on this and started doing on the previous Vanguard, is I listened to an animator's advice, and what animators were doing this on projects, rather than they do it sequentially from the first shot to the last, they jump around. So the quality remains and consistency remains throughout. So, because by the time they start scene one, start drawing, by the time they get to scene 300, they've improved over that time. The ending looks different from the first. I've tried to do different bits of different pages. I think it only works for me to work in bits.
Yeah, that'd be interesting. Pretty archaic.
When did you draw the last one? It's a couple of years ago, I suppose. You might find that you just start to change a little bit.
Yeah. Oh, it's very much different.
And this is all digital, isn't it? This one, Dan?
This is the first time I've done a comic like all on the iPad.
Yeah.
So I say all on the iPad. It is flatted on Photoshop. I still can't get my head around flatting on Photoshop.
We've seen a bit of a sneaky peek of what the art looks like.
Yeah.
And trust me, people, Dan Butcher has earned enough XP to level up to he can now wear the legendary
it's
armor.
Official.
He's worth that. He's worth that £250 you pay him a page.
In cocaine.
Comics only 3 pages long, is it?
But what are 3 pages?
I think I do agree that. I think Dan, you mentioned at some point that you think you'd improved for this issue, but I can really see it. It looks. I mean, I thought the first issue was absolutely amazing. But this one, so it's definitely got to that next level. And it's really great because I think that's what we want to do with this comic is just go like, right, here's issue 2, but look how much better it is. Look at it. It's amazing. Mm. And I think that's really
it's really just that kind of like the hand to eye of not looking at the having a whack on at your side and you're looking at the screen and they're sort of the two are not like disconnected. Looking straight at the screen and able to work on it. I don't know why I waited so fucking long. It's so much more natural and easier. It really is. considering I do most of my
curious own... as a non-artist, I was always super curious how people did that. It's sort of almost counterintuitive, isn't it? Yeah,
it's definitely a learned skill. I mean, yeah, as part of my like design stuff years ago, when I went into like this new place, they said, right, we don't work on mouse, it's all on tablets. And I was like, oh, fucking hell, all right. So like the first couple of days was really clumsy trying to get my head around it, but then after that it was just, it's like moving from a house brick to a scalpel using the tablet. Right. It's so much quicker. But then when you go from like the tablet, when you're not looking at to the looking at it, what you're drawing, that, again, that's another jump.
Hang on,
I found it hard to go back.
Hang on, it's moving from a house brick to a scalpel. Who are you stalking these days? Yeah, geez, that sounds a bit creepy. Yeah. Oh my God.
Well, you, it's a scalpel. The pen like motion.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
I
yeah,
wonder
yeah,
why he drove a van.
Yeah.
I keep all that rubber tubing in there, duct tape in the back.
But, yes, but I tell you what, he never goes bareback.
Oh. It's tempted to say that aloud over the Starbucks, but the.
Yeah. As you walked out, I went, proud. Dan, and you looked over, and I could see that look in your face saying, oh, please don't say it out loud all the way across Starbucks.
Well, I was walking out, you would have had to have sat in the awkward silence.
Yeah, that's true.
Everyone in the Starbucks spun around and looked at you.
Wouldn't be the first time.
No, it's true.
I mean, for you guys, what was it like? Like working sort of with an artist, like, you know, was it El Marvo the first time that you had sort of gone from like your prose stuff and things like that to a freelance artist?
Yeah, for me it was. Ben did a small like 5-page thing, right, Ben?
Yeah. So I did when I wrote my first like prose novel, which I published at the tail end of 2015. I did like a sort of 5-page graphic novel. Well, sorry, a 5-page comic companion piece to go alongside it. So that was the first time I'd really done that. But for a completely different project. But yeah, this was the first time that I'd really joined forces with an artist in this way and for such a big project. But yeah, it's been
quite
great.
A learning, isn't it? It is a very sort of like the collaborating is very different in that kind of way, you know, dealing with an artist. Yeah. And obviously getting to know the artist as well.
I think knowing the artist is probably a big thing. So, I mean, I'd read, I don't know how many issues of Vanguard by that point, but it was a lot. So I kind of knew Dan's style. I knew what he liked to do and what he was good at, like popping eyeballs and shit. But
But, it's tragic, actually. Back in the day, remember we recorded like an El Marvo where we talked and sat down and talked about the whole thing. And yeah, at the end, it hadn't recorded. We'd done a Vince.
It was, oh, right. To us.
What do you mean you did a Vince? That's... It happened once.
That's the worst thing that can happen to you doing a Vince.
I misspoke. You know.
That's the first time that ever happened to us as well. So we've done like 130 episodes of Horror Hangout, and we've done like how many other episodes of stuff, Luke?
That's never happened. 200, yeah, like 200, 300 episodes. But it happened after that, Ben, once. Like, I don't know, the file was corrupt for some reason. There was like no actual content. Yeah, it's weird. Yeah, but that interview was great, Ben. You were fantastic.
Shit. Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Are you going to do that again? Are you going to do that again for this one?
Well, I'm more than happy to do that.
I mean, maybe double up issues 1 and 2. Maybe the... Sort of.
That's a good idea.
It's a nice and easy stretch goal. That we've just done it ourselves for Atomic Hercules. It's a nice and easy stretch goal.
Audio commentaries—that's what people call them, isn't it? For comics. Yeah. And there's a lot. Yeah. You know, there is a fair few of them these days.
We did do that for the first episode. For the first issue, and we got that on YouTube. So yeah, it was just me and Luke for the first one. So I think we'll get you involved, Dan, if you're happy with that.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, that sounds awesome. Yeah, I'll do that. Lovely. We could do that thing where you hear the ting, and then you turn the page over. And then we talk about that page, and then...
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Like the read-along He-Man books. I used to have that.
Oh, I love them.
Did you see, I put it on Twitter, there's a read-along Rambo 2 book for kids.
What? Oh, yeah, you said.
Fucking bananas.
What?
Yeah, didn't he have a cartoon, though? He did have a cartoon.
Yeah, he had a cartoon. They made Rambo 2 into like a read-along kids book, and someone's put the audio tape on YouTube.
Never mind the audio tape. I want us to record that with Dan Butcher narrating.
Oh, I'd have to find the bloody book online.
Well, let's do it. If anyone out there's got
I'll do the lady voices.
Yeah. So, are there any ladies in Rambo?
In Rambo 2, there's the love interest who gets whacked.
Oh, no. Well, spoilers.
Yeah. I want to be careful about cultural appropriation. I don't want to be careful doing a voice or something.
Doing an accent.
That, right, means expendable is that if you get invited to a party, you don't show up, don't matter.
Just do whatever accent you're comfortable with. Don't try it. Don't try
to do a Welsh one.
Yeah, go on, do the Welsh one. Do we have any? Yeah. Can you remember any other lines from Rambo? We could do it now, live on the show.
Yeah, I could do it. It's it when you've come in my hand.
Oh, God. Do that again. Dad joke again.
But some marketing executive thought, I know, a great idea for a kid's toy line is a whacked out Vietnam vet with PTSD and a probable authority. That's a good idea.
It's like the there's a Toxic Avengers, Toxic Crusaders cartoon, which is insane to me. If you've seen any of the Toxic Avenger movies or any of the Troma movies, I can't stand that.
No way. Because one of the other things you guys did that, was it last year, the top 100 horror films?
And so, we do a podcast called Horror Hangout. We started a couple of years, 2.5 years ago or something like that. We've always kind of liked horror movies, but and we wanted to do another podcast. I think we were just kind of itching to do something as well. And then Empire put out the top 50 horror movies of all time as a list. So it's like, why don't we just work through this list and do like episodes about them? And it's been great. I mean, I've always been a horror movie fan, but now I feel like I kind of understand a lot more about the genre and how it's changed over the years and sort of the different movements and what's happened in the 80s. And even like back in the Universal Classic Monster days when I never saw any of those really before. That's been great. I think podcasts are great. I mean, it's a good excuse to, it gave us this project and kept us doing it for however long. But podcasts are just a fantastic medium for keeping
you
accountable.
It never ceases to surprise me that podcasts keep going for describing visual mediums. So there's loads of comic there's loads of movie ones, and all we do is describe things that you can't actually see. Yeah, it's a bit crazy, but they seem to work somehow. I don't know.
Well, obviously, when you're talking about like a touch point where you're familiar with the material and you can kind of like recall it yourself when they're talking about like an episode of RoboCop or The Big Brawl. So I know that stuff. So when you talk about it, it's like, oh yeah, shit.
Yeah,
but when you listen to stuff and someone's really passionate about the thing they're talking about and you know it really
I've said it before, I'm more likely to buy a comic because I hear someone talking about it passionately than I do if I see it on a flipping website, you know what I mean? It's weird when you think that's also a visual thing. It's a weird one, isn't it? But it seems
guys well versed in doing like a horror comic. I know you've done horror fiction.
Would you consider that? We do a podcast called The Other Stories, which is our main thing that we do. It's short horror stories every Monday, like tiny audiobooks, but with like music and effects and that kind of thing. It gets a lot of downloads. We get about 200,000 downloads a month.
Nice,
that's really nice.
So I thought we could pick and choose some stories that might adapt really well to the comics medium, and do some sort of anthology book. But then I don't know. I've kind of maybe we will do that at some point, but it's just there's not enough time and there's not enough resource to do everything. So maybe that's one for the future. I don't know.
I always said to myself, if I kind of won the lottery, I'd probably set up a publisher just to create comics and get in all the people that I know to just, you know, you wanted to do that comic. Yeah, I'm paying you to do that now. Go for it. Then 2 years down the line, we'd go bankrupt.
I mean, you guys are all like making stuff a lot. How do you guys like keep on top of it all? I mean, the podcasting and the writing and the making stuff. Do you ever feel like I just need to slow down? There's just too much.
The way I feel, I was talking to Adam Felt about this today. I just kind of get talked into doing things.
Yeah.
And they sort of just carry on, you know, just sort of get carried up in the moment of it, really. And it's just sort of, I think if you don't have an eye on the back of the net, as they say in sporting analogies, you're not doing it for the right reason. I think it's nice just to get it done and out there sometimes, you know.
Yeah.
It's a weird one.
I can imagine myself laying in the hospice and then Mr. Butcher, you've got a couple of hours, you want to say goodbye, and then reading the social media tweets and anyone went up for a 5-pager. Like, yeah.
I've got time.
I often say yes to stuff and then like look at the shit I've got now. Why the fucking say that? Because I just love being involved in creating.
Yeah.
And there's
that was going to
a lot to be said for, like, when you speak to creative people, like, well, when you go to any events or, you know, listen to podcasts, it does inspire you to sort of move on, like, with your own work. And you know, there should be, you know, I don't think when you're doing things on your own back, you shouldn't be too competitive about it. I mean, competition's good, it pushes you forward, but you shouldn't be trying to outdo
I'm
someone.
Just doing it for myself. We've said this before. We're just doing it for yourself. Yeah. I think it's the best possible way of doing it, I think. Yeah.
It comes across really douchey if you start being that guy of, oh, I fucking sold X amount of units, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
This doesn't really...
I think I know who you're talking about. Yeah.
You do well, because there's a few. I think.
He tried to get me to sit in a chair once and read his comments.
Oh no, here we go.
So I don't want to sit down, mate.
That's a twisted thing to do.
Yeah.
Oh god,
never encountered that.
No.
So good stuff.
The fact that if I'm like generally quite objectionable, people don't try and get me to do stuff like that, so I don't get caught up in it. It's quite good.
Yeah, don't get asked.
Yeah, when somebody comes to the table and starts talking, and I really spot early that they're going to be boring. I just say, "What do you think?" Vince? And then I walk off. I leave Vince talking.
Yeah, most of the time you just scrunch your face up. Like when anyone comes to the table, your face is like you've just been eating lemons all day.
If you can time like drinking your coffee just at the right time, then it kind of forces who's tabling with you to take over. Do it all the time.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
I've done a lot. It works, you know. Anything that works. Yeah. I've pointed at someone imaginary in the distance and said, "Oh, I've got to go and say it, wave." Yeah.
Didn't you guys do a podcast event about podcasting recently?
Yeah, there was Pod UK in Birmingham, and it was pretty much.
How did that go?
It's great. It was. It's just like a Comic Con. Okay. But there's like all the talks and workshops and all that. Standard stuff, but then they had a dealer's bit, which was just full of people who make podcasts who were sort of selling their wares, giving out flyers. Some people had their own books they were selling, lots of merch. I mean, some podcasts are massive. There's the No Sleep podcast, which is like a global phenomenon. Some of those people were there, and they have people coming in that dress as the characters and sort of know. Like their entire history of their episodes and that kind of thing. It's like its own medium. It's just like a Comic Con. That's the only way I can describe it. But less merch, okay. Like less. What are those little plastic things called again with the big heads?
Funkos.
Funkos.
Yeah. No Funko. Funkos. Yeah.
Not a single Funko was seen. There were a lot of D&D podcasts there, weren't there?
Oh yeah.
D&D podcast was pretty much every other table.
People are into D&D are a bit weird, aren't they, lads? Do you think or?
I don't really understand it. I imagine.
Yeah, pretty weird.
Anyone who does basement dwelling degenerates.
Yeah.
Or they're just properly sexy bastards.
Yeah. Kinky bastards, aren't they? I always feel like it's a bit kinky. Something a bit kinky about it. It's all role playing stuff, isn't it?
Yeah.
Look, I've spent the past 4 years role playing someone who's sane on this fucking podcast.
And it's exhausted
miserably.
have you ever seen The Night Porter? I tend to do a bit of that occasionally, you know.
Oh, what's that? Is that a sex move?
Yeah. Sounds like it.
What were we talking about?
I'm gonna elaborate on that.
Sexy role play.
Oh yeah, sexy role play. So who would you be?
I'd be a sexy nun. I've got a thing for sexy nuns. I could do that. It's my Catholic upbringing. I think I could do that.
Questions to awesomecomicspod@gmail.com if you want to find out more about that. But in terms of like conventions and stuff, how are you guys finding like conventions? Have you been to many shows?
We've not done as many as a lot of comic making people do. I think they can be quite expensive. Mm-hmm. I think there could be far too many Funkos. Mm-hmm. I don't understand what did the whole thing of people paying to go shopping, which is what a lot of them feels like. You don't pay to go to Tesco. You don't. I don't know. It doesn't sit well with me. But we have done some great cons. We like to do the Lincoln one. It's like a small one in Lincoln. But it's a really nice atmosphere there. The Wimbledon was great. The Wimbledon one we did.
Yeah.
I think I'd like to do more.
of us, me and you, Luke, and I'm eating a yum yum from Waitrose.
Yeah,
that was a highlight of the day. The yum yum.
That was the day of the from one side of the convention to the other. That's where it was birthed.
That's where it was born. Yeah.
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 My favourite video ever.
We saw the official king of Wimbledon that day as well. Do you remember that?
Yeah. Was he? Yeah. Penny farthing. Was he riding a penny farthing, or have I made that up?
He was done up like a right tinker, wasn't he?
Was he like a pearly king and queen? That's what.
Oh yeah,
that's
yeah.
It, yeah.
He's got his own mayor came in. Remember that? Oh, Rick Jackson's got some fucking pull.
He got the deputy mayor, and then
the pearly king of Wimbledon.
Well, I remember the deputy mayor was all right. I probably would have done.
Oh, well, there you
I think go. We're thinking of different people.
Yeah.
It's just that's a very.
It's a very large pool.
Oh God!
I think in terms of conventions, because our output's like so diverse, because we do like podcasts and books and comics. It's a bit like we haven't quite found our niche, I guess. Of what when we go there, we've got so much stuff.
Yeah,
it's almost like it can be a bit overwhelming for people.
Mm. Yeah, we'd like to do more. I think. I would anyway. I don't know about you, Ben. But I think we just need to know the right ones to do. Because I get a bit pissed off when there's so many Funko Pops in that.
Yeah. But... Whereabouts do you say you're up north now?
Is that in the Midlands.
Okay. Nottingham would be a good shout for you. I think that's quite a good little one.
We did that one.
We did two Nottingham ones. We did EMCon, which was the...
Oh, EMCon, yeah, okay.
It was all right, but it was you know, a bit...
No, the actual Nottingham Comic Con, MCon. I think MCon's about to happen, isn't it? Something.
We did the Nottingham Comic Con as well.
Yeah, we did both, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
We did
both. Yeah.
That was good.
What about Mac Powell? Is that any good?
Macclesfield days.
Yeah, it'd be good to get a few more booked in once issue 2 gets out and about out in the big wide world. So.
Are you going to do like a launch event, or have you decided you're going to do like a little, or is it, you know, just going to be an online launch, or
do you think we should?
I don't know. I mean, I'm not doing one for our one. We just get started because people buy it who've pledged to it. But sometimes it's worth doing if you've got like the equivalent of a Gosh or something like that, Traveling Man maybe, something like that near you.
Oh, I've got you like in like a shop.
Page 45,
I'd love to do it. Or you could just do a YouTube live video or whatever. Just make a party out of it.
We probably do something like that. I think because we're not near each other, we do tend to do stuff over the internet instead.
there's my
local comic book shop in Mansfield, Ground Zero Comics, which is where I grew up reading comics. So it'd be nice to do something there.
Oh, that's cool.
That'd be awesome. That'd be great.
Also good to know another comic book shop to shout out.
Yeah.
So Ground Zero.
Yeah, but you wouldn't want to go to
Ground Zero.
You don't want to go there.
No. The comic book comic shop I grew up with is gone. It's annoying. It used to be the Phantom Zone in Croydon. It's gone now.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. It did appear in an episode of Bill, though. So
that was all film around Croydon, wasn't it? You always see bits of Croydon in the Bill, didn't you?
Yeah.
Well, mine's almost gone. Orbital, you know.
Yeah, shit.
Wait, what's going on?
Sucks.
I've stopped taking diamond orders and
closing
2 days a week. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh. Tony, you have to tell us off air what happened on Saturday, because Tony...
But before we get onto that, so the Kickstarter is going live now. So what if people want to search for it, obviously they'll follow you online. Where can they find the link, and you know, what do they search for on Kickstarter?
If you search for Elmarvo on Kickstarter, I'm pretty sure it'll pop up. But all the social media stuff will be going through our Hawk and Cleaver stuff. So I guess, Ben, what's all the links for that?
So Hawk and Cleaver, just one word sort of, and is just everything. So at Hawk and Cleaver, Twitter, at Hawk and Cleaver, Instagram, / Hawk and Cleaver, Facebook. We're on YouTube as well. If you just search Hawk and Cleaver, we're going to be posting some stuff there. The Kickstarter video will be going live there, as well as like loads of other bits and bobs throughout the 30 days that the Kickstarter is going to be live.
Yeah.
But if you just search Elmarvo in Kickstarter, I'm pretty sure it would be the first thing. It will pop up. Maybe not the first thing, but it will pop up somewhere. Mm.
And
I'll be tweeting the fuck about it as well. Yeah, so
damn well. And if you haven't heard of Hawk and Cleaver before this show, then you're about to discover a massive library of prose, comics, audio, etc. So you're welcome.
Yeah.
Hell yeah. Loads of shit.
And
why are you called Vulcan Cleaver? I've never, I don't know that origin story.
I don't even know if Ben knows. Or where, because so my surname's Condor, and my another guy in Hog Cleaver's called Matt Butcher. So I think we'd said Condor and Butcher when we first said it years ago. And then we just thought, well, I can't do that because it's not just us two. So let's change it a little bit. Condor became Hawk and Butcher became Cleaver. And then it doesn't really matter, does it, a name? It's just something to label it all together.
Well, it matters now because now it's a brand.
Yeah. I really like it.
Yeah.
It's kind of two words you shouldn't, you don't expect to go together.
Yeah.
So,
And it's professional as fuck. So.
Did you know that, Ben? Ben, did you know that?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think you told me that before, but I'm not sure if I was listening.
Sounds about right.
Yeah.
Yes, it's my name, Bob.
There's a bunch of rewards that we're going to be doing with El Marvo, included. Well, you have to check out the campaign when it goes live.
Yes.
But there's some tasty treats to be had.
But there's loads of tasty treats, loads of like digital stuff, loads of physical stuff, and extra little bits and bobs. So yeah, go check out on Kickstarter, and there's going to be loads of stuff available.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So expect to hear as Butcher's here every week. Expect to hear an update. Over the next few weeks as well.
Yeah, I don't think you can be backwards in coming forwards. I think people expect a certain level of promotion, don't they? I don't think it bores people too much these days. We know it's going to happen. Yeah. You know, I think once a day people know it's going to pop up.
Yeah. Yeah. So, check out the Kickstarter, check out the rest of their work, and the guys are sticking with us for the next little bit. And, before we get onto the recommends, do we have any shout-outs this week, gents?
Yeah, I've got a couple.
As always,
thanks to everyone who pledged to Atomic Hercules. Very kind of you. We met today, me and the Falp, and it's pretty much drawn now. It's all done. So we've got we just got to order a couple of things. We've got a test print coming back from the printers any day now, so won't be long, and it'll be in your inboxes. And the other is the Spark has got a subscription service. Subscribe to a year's worth of the Spark, which is four issues for $14.99. That's a pretty good deal. And also have a look at their other titles, Hopper, Springworth, Gallant Amos and Snuffy and Zoe. There's some real crackers in there, and all three, me, Dan and Vince, are all going to be in issue 3 of the Spark, so look out for that now as well. There you go.
Nice. Dan, do you have any?
No, I don't. I probably do, but I can't remember.
Yeah, I'll remember what I was going to shout out in a minute. Okay, now it's that time of the show where we all recommend stuff to you, and there's going to be a lot. Yeah, there's lots of stuff that's going to be recommended to you this week with all the guests. I've got a couple. Tony's got a couple of mentions, but I think Dan Butcher has an epic one to kick us off with. So Danny B in the place to be, take it away.
Tony's going to help me a little bit out with this because he was at the European Comic Con. What was it called again, Tony?
Anglem.
The one I spelt wrong when I was trying to.
But you did go super French on it. I see where you're going with it. Yeah.
Oh, thanks.
You've made it into two French words. I think if I'd have given it a try without knowing, that's definitely where
I know. I should have just tried, like, when I Googled it, I should have actually just tried to see what the actual correct spelling was. But no, I just typed it in and thought, well, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which, you saw this book on a table.
So I took a picture of it, didn't I, and sent it to you. And you said, and by the time you messaged me back, I'd made it out of the tent, this huge fucking tent. And you said, go back and buy that for me now. So I did.
And it's made by some Israeli creators.
Yeah, I think I've got a feeling they're from like Haifa or something like that, I think.
Okay.
They're super nice people, like really funny. Just a bit wacky, you know.
I think this book's a bit tongue-in-cheek. I hope it is, otherwise...
Oh, it definitely is.
Yeah, okay.
It definitely is.
So it's Cobra 2. I think it's an unauthorized, by the Sylvester Stallone estate, sequel to the 1980 film Cobra, and it's called Act One Claw Marks. And it's
I saw the original in the cinema, Cobra. That's how bad it is.
Oh, nice.
Bloody hell. Yeah. Did you understand at that point why he cut the ends off a pizza?
No.
With scissors. Can't remember
it that well. Yeah, with scissors. Why? That's in terms of like character sort of quirks. That's a real weird one.
That's up there, yeah. Doesn't really add anything, and it's never referred to again.
No,
I mean, I was sort of 14, so I was just staring at Bridget Nielsen a lot. Do you know what I mean? During that movie, yeah.
Because he says famously, "Crime is a cancer, I'm the cure." But there's No cure for cancer, so that's what it was. So yeah, it's a strange book. It starts off with a reference in the Bible, Job. It says, "He shall suck cobra venom, the viper's tongue shall kill him." And it starts with a series of, like, they're supposed to be photos of a crime scene. And over the top, it says how many robberies there are in America, how many burglaries, rapes, etc. And all these bodies have been torn up by looks like a monster. And the chief says, "I'll go get the cobra." And then we see Sylvester Stallone pull up on his bike with the cobra pistol. He's, is it Marion Cobretti is his name?
And, is that, okay.
Yeah, and he's got a cobra, so everyone calls him the Cobra. And shortly after talking to the chief of police, he drops a racial slur that made me almost spit my drink out. I was like, holy fuck. I'm not going to say it on this podcast. But I was like, okay, so let's go in there. And then Sylvester Stallone's the Cobra just seems to go around the underworld just brutally murdering and shooting people almost on a whim. And you think, oh, Christ, where's this going to go? And he's sort of talking about trying to hunt down this virtual monster that's kind of done these slayings. And then it cuts to a sequence where he's bare-chested and, like, arming up. He's got, like, an Uzi and a .45 pistol. And then there's shots of a man playing sax. I don't know why.
Yeah.
But the way he's drawn...
Lost Boys style.
He looks like Stallone's had a stroke. And like,
it's very DIY. Oh, another one.
Yeah, it's really good. It's fantastic. So then, the next scene, which I had to read several times to kind of get the most out of, and I'm not going to read any more after this. He goes to a video arcade, and you see all these video game screenshots of these people playing games. And I worked out, oh, these are kids. They're like young teens. And it cuts to an alley sequence where there's about a dozen of them. They're holding down a bull mastiff. And the lead one says, "I'm going to rape it."
Oh, God.
God.
And I was, pardon? So Cobra turns up in the scene and says, I don't listen to children. They say, "We ain't children, man. We're the future." And he goes, "No, you're the past. Past your bedtime." And then it cuts the blam, blam, blam. He's just executing them all. And then it cuts to the inside of the arcade where he's got this Uzi. And he's just hosing everyone down. It's like, why? It's fucking
I didn't read all of it, but I had a little look at the second one. And there's one where he fights this sort of... Because everyone's got their shirt off, seemingly.
Yeah.
And he fights this bloke who's like a Russian hard man. And he just reaches over and pulls his jaw off. And then says, "Sleep tight." And that's kind of it.
It's just... I might have to put some scans up online. I realise there's a Facebook page. They don't show any of the pages. Fucking bananas. It's great.
Yeah.
Fucking crazy.
Yeah. We might have to post it on the Facebook group.
The awesome group.
I'm in contact with the creator. We should get him on.
Yeah.
Yeah,
maybe an interview on that one.
When there's an insane book that we come across, we normally want to talk to the person.
This is like Man versus Rock, all over.
Yeah.
This one seems to take it a little further than Man Bites Rock, if that's possible.
Yeah. So, where can people get hold of this?
There's nothing in the book actually telling you where to get it.
I think it's Humdrum Press, is it something like that? Off the top of my head, I think that might be the name of it. We'll put it, if I can find it, we'll put it in the show notes.
I found the Facebook page of the artist creator, but there's nothing in the book. It says printed in Israel, July 2018. I do like that they've put this is a parody in no way affiliated with the Canon films. If you can make that mistake.
But it's proper. It proper looks like a little underground. It looks like a little fanzine kind of underground thing, doesn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah, mm. yeah.
It's that sort of feel to it.
If you went to a comic con, like an underground comic con, and when they're selling it, it's exactly the type of book I'd expect to find.
Yeah. Yeah, do well at a movie festival and stuff like that, I reckon, as well.
Yeah. It's an interesting one. People like me who would pick it up.
Yeah. I went to a movie festival with Jason Gunn recently, and we both bought Turkish Planet the Apes. It's the sort of thing that would do well. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Those sort of tables to sell that sort of turk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you still bought it.
I know. I can't wait to watch it. He bought Turkish Exorcist as well. I'm not sure what that's like.
God knows.
Very interested.
Yeah. So if we'll put a link in the show notes if we can find out where to find this absolute gem of a book.
Yeah,
I'll put some of the pages up so you can have a look.
Yeah, go on, do that. Yeah, people like that. Yeah, yeah. I've got a feeling Rachel Lee Carter knew about it. I think when I put the pages up, I think she'd seen it or something.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I know she's into a sort of film crossover zine kind of stuff, isn't she? Like
that,
Yeah.
Right, so that was Cobra 2. Now, following that, I think, since we've got two guests, if one of them does a recommend now, and then...
Yeah,
then
one of us will do one.
Then I'll go, and then... Sure. How's that? So, yeah. Which of our lovely guests would like to go first and recommend something?
Do you want to go, Ben?
You can go, Luke. Go for it, man.
Cool. Okay, so... I've got a book here by a solo creator named Tony McMillan. I don't think he's on the sort of the UK small press radar. I think he's based in LA. I don't even know how I got connected to him, but if you just go to tonymcmillan.com, you'll see his style. McMillan's spelled McMillen. He's got a sort of really crazy, erratic style, but it's definitely his own thing. He letters it all himself. He writes all the comics himself. But the book that I think is insanely good, actually, is a thing called Serious Creatures. And it's about a guy who... it tells us the tale of a guy going through his life, but also amongst the backdrop of the growing special effects industry in LA. So this guy works on Jaws and then The Thing. But all the films are called slightly different names. So Jaws is called Finn. F-I-N. But it's a really beautiful, beautifully told story in a really interesting backdrop. So like Steven Spielberg's in there, John Carpenter shows up. It's about a guy who doesn't quite know who he is and wears masks all the time and that kind of thing. But the art style really does sell it. I can't really recommend it enough. I've got another of his books. His last one he did was called Lumen, which was a bit more of a sort of... horror post-apocalyptic sort of thing.
Is he self-published or is it published through someone else? Or
self-publishers? I mean, I've got a feeling that he could definitely land it with a publisher if he wanted to. I just don't think he does. I don't think he wants to. He sort of his style is weird. The way his process is weird as well. I think it's like a huge what do you call it? Like lino pressing or something like that.
Print.
Like
yeah.
massive like
yeah.
ink. Loads of ink just like slapped all over the pages.
I'm just looking at it now. It's beautiful stuff.
Yeah,
Who would you compare it to, V?
Strangely enough, I mean, even though there's more colour, there's sort of ink washes and like watercolours and stuff.
Yeah.
There's a certain scratchiness to it. Obviously, I think like Lucy Sullivan, who we spoke
right,
to
okay.
recently,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
That sort of figure. There's almost like a sort of like a book illustration sort of look to like the characters and stuff as well. Yeah, but it does have that print sort of feel to it, doesn't it? And the lettering, it's all, you can tell it's all by hand, you know.
Love a bit of hand lettering, don't we, occasionally? Yeah.
I was going to actually, if I was going to see you guys at Con, I was actually going to bring this with me because I really wanted to get it into your hands so you could maybe get it out to
the awesome. Up.
Awesome. Oh, nice. Because I kind of feel like he's you know, it's all off his own back and he's a really fantastic talent. And I feel more people should know about him. He's a great guy as well.
Yeah. Oh, cool. I mean, this is definitely up, like knowing our listeners and the sort of book that this is definitely in their wheelhouse. Also, Serious Creatures, the complete first issue. If you just want to read it digitally, he's put it on his website. So, issue one, number one. Is it just one issue, Serious Creatures?
So, he's just finished issue six, I believe. He's going to... So I asked him if he's going to do it as a collected edition. He said he will do it at some point. But I think for now, you could just... He's got like an Etsy store. I think there's a link on his website.
Yeah.
So you can just buy them, buy the physical single issues. But what he did for me, so because this Serious Creatures is only like a small comic, he said he'll throw in his Lumen book, which is like a 80-page graphic novel, for free. So it was like, he said £15 for both, including shipping from the US. So I ended up paying him £30 because like you've got to make a bit of money on it. But yeah, it's a really great guy. I think
there's a bit of Gareth Brooks in there as well. I'm just looking at it now, but with a sort of a broader sense of colour. Mm. It's quite representative, isn't it? It's Yeah, it's not what I expected. Oh, yeah. Okay.
It's got a screen printy kind of feel to it that I really like.
Actually. There's a sort of flat colour usage quite a lot, which I kind of like. It's got a pop arty sensibility to it a little bit. Yeah. Okay. There you go. Good stuff.
Yeah, this is quality.
Nice one.
Yeah.
That's what we love about this show, discovering new stuff.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for that, Luke. All right, I suppose I'll be next. And this time I'm going to just quickly mention a couple of art books rather than actual comics themselves. The first one is a Kickstarter reward that I got. It's full of beautiful illustrations by Gavin Mitchell. It is The Pocket Full of Monsters, an illustrated retrospective.
Yeah, I've got this. I've yet to read it. It's in my pile.
Printed by Happy Clam. It's a beautiful book, though, isn't it? You must have flicked through it.
Oh, yeah.
This is a fantastic little art book. It goes beyond just drawing some images and putting them together. Because the basis of this book is Gavin sort of found his childhood collection of Monster in My Pocket, if anyone out there remembers what they are. They're a brilliant sort of collectible sort of little... They were little plastic figures, weren't they? That you just get all different colours. I remember I had a few as well, so that was why I definitely had to pledge on it.
Remember them. I never used to have any.
I had a few of them, and some of the ones that he's illustrated in here, I definitely had. And it was always that I can't remember whether it was a mystery what you got, because I had several versions of...
Was there a comic about it as well at one point?
Probably it was the 80s.
Like the UK, there was a comic UK weekly than... comic thing. Yeah.
How did he used to buy them? Were they in like packs or...?
I think they were. I can't remember off the top of my head.
So I can remember those muscle figures. You used to get like two in a little pack. They're like those fleshy wrestling figures.
Yeah. But there was something that you definitely collected, and like obviously Gav found that his collection and thought the design of the characters was quite cool, so he thought, oh, these would be fun to draw. It just started off as a drawing exercise and then became this beautiful little art book that he obviously just got carried away. Anyone who's seen Gavin Mitchell's artwork knows it's absolutely stunning. So taking that, but what he's also done as well, every spread is basically this. You've got a beautiful illustration on the right hand side, and on the left you have the details of the actual sort of figure itself, a lot of like the species, born, size, habitat, the point value, basically all the stuff that you got with the sort of figure itself. It tells you what number it was in the series. For instance, I'm looking at a spread here that's the Hunchback, and it's number 48 of series one. And you got a photo of the different color variations as well on a white background. Nice photography of the original figure, and a little review above, which is basically just Gavin's opinion on them. And anyone who knows Gav knows he's got a great sense of humour, so they're all funny little reviews as well. And he's drawn, the artwork he's drawn is basically, it's not just, he's tried to replicate how the figure looks as well into sort of a background. So there's like a gargoyle, which is just sort of crouched down with its wings up in the air. But of course, he's put the gargoyle on the edge of a ornate cathedral, looking nice. Menacing with a beautiful sort of clouds behind it, and there's a winged panther which is in a jungle, which is absolutely stunning. Any of these would be an absolutely fantastic print. I say print in a world where everything will be brilliant prints, but no one fucking buys prints, do they?
Yeah. unless they're Photoshop pictures of Darth Maul or something.
But this is, and that's why art books like this are perfect, because you get a whole collection of fantastic artwork. This is a labour of love as well. I know Gav, he did some videos of like the artwork in process, so there was videos as he was working on them as well. And the Kickstarter itself, the page is probably still there, because it had an absolutely phenomenal video that made me laugh.
Yeah, it did. It was a funny one, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a funny one. Yeah. It's Happy Clam. So follow Gav on Instagram, Bob Goblin, which is BOBGOBLYNN. That's how you can find him, and just look for Happy Clam on Twitter as well, because they're just fantastic. This is a real nice little high quality book as well, and it came with a shiny little sticker as well that made me it was that sort of old school sticker that had the holographic sort of glittery sort of, in the outside of a sticker in a sticker album had that sort of shiny, it wasn't just silver, there was something like sparkly about it, which made me go, ooh. You know me, Tony. I love a sparkle.
You're like a magpie.
And then the other quick one I'm just going to mention, because it's full of beautiful artwork, and it is the art of Ed McGuinness.
Cool.
It's a Marvel book, and it says The Art of Ed McGuinness, Deadpool and His Amazing Friends, because most people probably know McGuinness from his Deadpool covers and things like that. It's I don't know how many pages it is, but it is like an oversized, well, it's bigger than A4. It was just one of those Amazon sort of purchases. I just thought, right, go for it, because I heard Ed talking about it on, I think it was on social media, sort of saying this is out, but not many people may know
about
it.
They're putting a few of them out, aren't they? And you don't really see, I never see them, seem to see them in shops. Yeah. I think it's one of those, if you've got like a special deal with Marvel, that's part of it, isn't it? You get on these sort of...
Yeah, but they're not necessarily pushing these kind of things.
They're not really, are they?
And I tell you one thing, they're not fucking designing the covers either, but I'll get onto that in a minute. But what I love about this, I've loved Ed McGuinness's artwork ever since he appeared on like my radar when he first appeared in the 90s Deadpool comics, when he was oversized, chunky figures.
Yeah, chunky.
Real blocky. There was a thick outline outside it. Obviously, he went off to do other work as well. But this book starts with nice big pages of those comics.
One of my all-time favorite comic book runs, that. The Joe Kelly, Ed McGuinness run.
So good. Like, great. You had like amazing sort of... There's when he fought Taskmaster...
Yeah, he
just couldn't beat Taskmaster because he knew all his moves, and then he decided to do a funny little dance, which really confused Taskmaster.
I feel like that run got Deadpool right in the way that Deadpool hasn't been done right in a long time.
Well, yes. I think that's the character the movies are of. It's not the Liefeld character. The Liefeld character
Created
his teeth and all that sort of thing. That's the person who, for me, really sort of encapsulated what we see as now and what is the current character in the comics.
That's what frustrates me when Liefeld sort of said, well, this is me. Yeah. It's like, you didn't make that character.
No.
Yeah. Just like, I mean, he also co-created. He didn't create. He co-created it as well.
And when it started out, though, with the Joe Kelly run, it wasn't always, oh, reader, I'm talking direct to the reader. It was just a funny character in, like, sometimes there was pretty serious storylines going on.
Yeah, but, he got really emotional at times. Because he just wanted to be a hero.
Yeah.
And there's just times where he just kept fucking things up. And he was a scary guy as well. Like, he would just flip out, in one panel. You'd no idea why. And it's because, like, an emotionally damaged guy.
And, like, Blind Al, like, there was an issue where you found out that he basically stopped her from leaving the house by keeping like knives and stuff there and things. It was like these brilliant sort of reveals. But McGuinness's artwork was brilliant, and of course he went on to do sort of other work. And this book is full of, you know, you see the evolution, because obviously he went away, he did some Wildstorm stuff, he did some DC stuff, a lot of people probably know from Superman, etc. Superman, Batman, he did a lot of as well, didn't he? Before coming back to Marvel, this is all his Marvel work. And
so is that like the Red Hulk stuff and the Avengers stuff as well?
Cable as well.
Right.
You got Red Hulk and basically all the way up until modern day. If you're just seeing lots of it, like the Amazing X-Men, and it's a very simply put together book. You know, you've got nice, just simple panels of the artwork. You have, if there's covers, you'll see sketches. You'll see his sketches from the first initial sketch to the more detailed sketch to the final piece. But it's very much just white pages with little details. You know, it's almost like a, you know, when you find like a book in a library, like when you're researching something, and it was literally just images with a little bit next to it, sort of saying opposite and right, and a little, you know, it's almost it's just a nice sort of reference book of seeing this man's sort of artistic journey. And you know, I mean, I prefer his chunkier stuff, but every single thing he draws is absolutely stunning and beautiful. And I don't think he gets enough credit. I mean, certainly he's done some amazing covers, and also he's drawn a lot of Spider-Man, because he did a lot of Spider-Man and Deadpool, didn't he, I think, as well.
Yeah. So, he's just finished on the Avengers, isn't he? He's actually been all right.
Yeah, he did, didn't he? Yeah, because I remember when that was announced, I was really excited about it.
Because he did the She-Hulk's gone a bit sort of Hulk, as opposed to sort of sexy.
Yeah. And he draws that right. He can draw, like, proper chunky bastards. Well, so it's a beautiful book. I will say, though, that it's nice to have it simple on the inside and very clear, but they could have done something with the cover. If you just see the cover of it, you've got this nice illustration that's got Wolverine, Deadpool and Spider-Man. That looks like it's just been cut out and just stuck on a white background. And the art of Ed McGuinness is just in the most basic font you can imagine. It's just so...
Is it oversized?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I've got the Diodato version of this. They did one with him.
Yeah. Did they do a similar thing with that cover? Just plain
white?
Like,
yeah. I remember this coming out.
Yeah.
And just, I would have thought, if you're going to announce the art of whatever artist it is, you know, make the cover beautiful. Make, you know, really just, I mean, the book is full of absolutely stunning covers and artwork. Just take one of them and just have it filling the page, just bleeding off the page. I would say that's a minor quibble, but a cover's quite an important thing, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
How
much was that then?
I think it was about £16, £15.
Oh, right. It ain't cheap then. Okay.
No, it's not. Yeah, it's not. I mean, for me, it's value for money. It was value for money because it's just, when I got it, I opened it up and just thought, oh, thank God, it's actually full of artwork from page to page, you know, from cover to cover. Yeah. It's just artwork. Brilliant. I was a bit worried about it. But knowing that this sort of layout, you know, I may, if there's more artist versions out there, I'll probably pick them up, even though I probably won't like their covers. But if you like art, Ed McGuinness's, I know he's got lots of fans out there, definitely get this book, because if anything, you'll just look through it and just have flashbacks to those comics that made you love his artwork in the first place. And brilliant stuff. So yeah, find it on Amazon, etc. I mean, if you can't find it in your local comic book store, which Tony says there,
I've got to see it.
Yeah, which is a shame, because you know, if they're going to do things like this, push them to the moon. Do you know what I mean? Sort of.
Yeah.
So that's mine. So
who's on next? Is it Ben?
On to Ben.
Yeah, I can do one. No problem. So mine's not a comic book as such, but I'm going to talk about the new On Writing book by Chuck Palahniuk. Everyone familiar with his stuff? Obviously, Fight Club Author.
Yeah, is that how you pronounce his name?
Well, see, I thought it was Palahniuk, but I've Palahniuk. I heard someone say that the other day.
Oh, did you? Okay.
It's one of those fucking three things, isn't it? Come on. Which one is it?
Yeah, Chuck Palahniuk. Sure, I heard it.
Palahniuk, that's what I say, I think. Yeah.
Czech Palahniuk. Yeah, so, I mean, I'm pretty...
Uranus or Uranus, which is it?
Charles Paleontology.
I'm quite into all these, like, writing books and stuff, especially, like, of writers that I really admire, and it's nice to sort of look into their creative process and stuff. This is probably like the best one. I've nearly finished it now, but this is probably the best one I've read in terms of for stuff that I feel like I can actually take and put forward into my writing. So loads of really good tips that you... I mean, I found myself like making notes like pretty much all the way through, but like some of them can kind of like ramble on a little bit. Some of them are a bit like anecdote heavy, but this one's just loads of stuff which is just really, really helpful. There's even like a troubleshooting... some troubleshooting pages towards the back where it basically just says things like talking about like your prose and whether there's so your narrative voice is boring, you fail to build tension, a scene runs on and on and on without contributing to the horizontal or the vertical of the story, and it's just like really, really easy troubleshooting things to try and work out where to go with writing, because obviously it's easy to get stuck with various different projects, whether it's a comic, whether it's prose, whether it's a script, anything like that. And I just find myself really just enjoying reading this book so far. And as I said, like loads and loads of stuff that I feel like I can take forward into my writing, really helpful. The Stephen King On Writing one is probably like the jewel in the crown of all these On Writing books. But this one, I feel like, just has got a lot more things that I can apply to my writing anyway. But
I'm guessing the Stephen King one didn't finish very well.
He didn't.
I think it does end quite well, that one. I think.
Here we go.
Sorry, I'm a big King fan, but I think the On Writing one ends with him in his accident, right?
Christ!
Of course, a couple of years ago since I read it, I know he does. He does feature a story that someone wrote in and gave him or something. Is that right? Or they won a contest.
A short story, and he has like a reading list or something. I think that's one of the best Stephen King books. His own writing one, but what's that book called, Ben? Consider This.
It's called Consider This, Moments in My Writing Life After Which Everything Was Different. There's loads of really good anecdotes where he talks about other writers he's met and stuff. There's a couple of good Stephen King ones in there. But yeah, most of it just seems really like approachable. It's just like approachable book where you're not reading through things going, oh, well, that doesn't really resonate with me, or that's not something I'd ever do. It's all stuff where you kind of go, well, I've never tried that, or maybe I should try that. And he refers to things as well. He refers to his books, but he also refers to films. Like a lot of the time when you're reading these on writing books, they refer to so many different books where you're like, well, I've never read that and I'm probably never going to read that. Whereas this, where he refers to like mainstream films and stuff, like we all know, even if we've not seen the film, we all know the basics of what stories are. So yeah, it's cool. There's some really good illustrations in it as well. Like so this tattooist has kind of put together some of the most quotable bits from the books, and he's done these illustrations throughout. Yeah, it's really good. I only just started it sort of less than a week ago, and I've nearly finished it. So
That's interesting, because reading these books, I wouldn't kind of imagine he would be the person to do that kind of thing. But there you go.
I agree.
He used to put essays up on litreactor.com, which is a great website for writing prose. And so those creative essays, I read some of them about 6 or 7 years ago, and there's stuff in those essays that I still do to this day. Fantastic, like creative writing teacher. He just teaches you how to write well, and sort of not waffle on, which I guess Stephen King can do.
There's a lot of like try not to overthink it, I guess, which is something I guess I'm guilty of. Like when I'm writing, especially when I'm writing prose, I tend to really overthink stuff. But this is just like super super simple tips that you can apply to any type of writing, I guess. But yeah,
nice.
Really really recommend it. Lovely.
Nice. Last one I read of his was that Rant, and that was like fucking hell.
Oh yeah.
That was another book I was like fucking hell.
Dan, have you read his short story Guts?
No, I don't think I have.
It's famous for making people faint. I read the back of work at my old workplace, and I had to stop halfway through because I felt my head dropping. It's just a short story. It's online, I think. It's called Guts.
He talks about guts like probably more than anything else in
but
this
it,
book.
There's something special about that story. I don't know why it does what it does, but it gives you like a physical reaction. It's difficult to read.
Okay.
He tries to explain why he thinks it gives people that physical reaction in this book. And it's pretty like interesting the way he sort of talks about it and goes.
It's voodoo, isn't it?
It's bloody voodoo, mate. It was published in Playboy, wasn't
Playboy.
It?
Yeah. Did someone say that then? Yeah, March 2004. There's one of these stories where it talks about all these different people and they're locked in a house, and one of them they talk about all their fucked up past. And this one he I can't remember what it's called, but
Haunted.
The guy and he goes starts masturbating in the swimming pool with his arsehole being sucked by the extraction fan in the swimming pool.
Yeah, you've got to be careful putting your arse over there. I'll suck your arse right out.
Yeah, basically, in the book, it starts sucking out his lower intestine and he's trying to swim away. Yeah,
everyone knows that. Never put your arse over the vent. Everyone knows that.
He has to like bite his way out or something, right? Doesn't he?
Yeah, he basically has to deal with the fact that he's got no lower colon after that. It's fucking hardcore.
Yeah.
So from that,
put your ass near it, never over it, Jesus.
From that joyous all ages experience, Tony, do you want to recommend?
I specialise in all ages. Don't know if you guys have listened to the podcast before, but it's mostly what I do.
Don't word it like that, Tony.
All ages. So I'm going to go with Zero Sum Bubblegum, which is a collection of short stories in comic form by David Robertson. David kindly sent me a little package of his comics the other day. He mostly does the stories, and there's a few guest artists in it as well. It's one of those perfect bound, slightly smaller than American-sized comics. It's got a collection of 26 stories in it, if you can believe it. It's a big old book of stories. I'm just going to talk about a couple of them. My favourite one, one of my favourites, is a book with death in the title. So it initially starts out like a sort of just a story of a sort of soap opera, trials and tribulations of a librarian, until this librarian discovers that every time he lends a book called A Book with Death in the Title to someone, they mysteriously die. And he only catches on when the fourth person dies, and he realizes, unfortunately, this was someone he didn't really like much. And he's given it to this sort of rude customer who insists on renting it, even though he hasn't paid his back fees. And it's only at that point that I realise that Dave, I think, is actually a librarian himself. So, which leads me to believe that Dave is also a serial killer, which we've all known for a long time after having him on the show.
Yeah,
it's very good. There's he lays little bits of satire and little winks at the reader and stuff in his books. And I really like the way he does that. There's a story called Tiddlywinks, and it just shows what the world would be like if Tiddlywinks was as popular as football. So kids are forced to play Tiddlywinks at school, even though they don't want to. It's always on. Tiddlywinks is always on the TV in pubs and even in hospitals. Annoys him. The characters tried to get to a funeral and it's disrupted by Tiddlywink traffic. You know, it's just like gentle personal satire. It just kind of makes. And if you know Dave, Dave is a very dryly humoured person, and you can just see him telling you these stories that just make me laugh. There's just one story which is about the sort of karmic possibilities of or ponderings of a man sitting on a bus deciding whether or not he should give his seat up to a lady who's standing there. And he ponders so much, he actually gets to the point where he thinks, well, God's probably not watching. Nobody really gives a fuck, you know. And he imagines this bloke who doesn't give his seat up, and he uses the phrase, he went home and he had a beautiful curry and a blowjob. And it doesn't affect him by not giving his seat up. And he just shows that he's eating a curry and getting a blowjob. It's just this sort of mad stuff. There's Junior Scrabble, which is a dad and his son team up to pay his wife and daughter at Scrabble. And every combination of letters that land on the table are things like arsehole, bastard, fuckers. And he keeps trying to sort of avoid saying things in front of his kid. And his kid says, you're playing to lose because you didn't put fuckers in there. You know, it's like that. It's sort of clever. It's just a scattergun of just different things that sort of occur to you, while often weird, often funny, they, you know, often sort of touchingly insightful and truthful. It's just Dave's really of the school where he says, look, just make a comic. He says it's one of his favorite phrases. If you listen to that comic smell, he's always said, no, just get on and make a comic. No, don't worry about it, just get on and make it. Stop like procrastinating. And you know, that it's just the time is now to make it, which I kind of like. And he grabs these moments out of the everyday and sometimes slightly banal, but he gives them this sort of clever twist. He's got a very sort of singular view on life, which is has that sort of idiosyncratic style that is all and only him, really, which I kind of admire, that he's just doing it his own way. And Dave puts out a lot of comics, you know, he puts out a lot of work, and it's always interesting and always different. And I have to admit, there's a couple of stories that the art is done by someone else in there. And I don't know, it just broke up the run a little bit for me. I really like Dave's straightforward. It's not overcomplicated. You know what's going on in the story. Yeah. There's a little bit of real life about it. And it's broken up a little bit by some sort of slightly more cartoony stuff in there, which I didn't like as much. I have to say I like Dave's stuff the most. If you go to www.fredeggcomics.com, or fredeggcomics.blogspot.co.uk, and he's on Twitter at fredeggcomics, and you can get, he's got bundles of books, and he, to be fair, he just sent me these for free. It's very kind of him. I've always enjoyed reading his stuff. And the other one, I just want to give a worthy mention to Skyscraper, which I backed on Kickstarter and finally got around to reading this afternoon.
So Ryan Lindsay's
that's right, yeah. So Ryan's friend of ours, and he's been on the show a couple of times. Art is by Mitchell Collins. Colorist and letters is by our other pal, who I made get up very early in the morning once, Simon Robbins. Edited by Dan Hill. I've got the digital copy, and now I'm desperate to get the, because it's done in a sort of newspaper style format. Do any of you guys have the newspaper version of it?
No.
I've seen pictures on his newsletter of it. It looks great.
Yeah, it's really ideal, and it's done with a sort of horizontal cascading style of panels that are the sort of mystery of something that happens at the start. Yeah.
It was done with that format in mind, isn't it? So
yes, very much so. Yeah. I'd recommend the physical copy. I read it on a sort of quite a big iPad, but I don't think it would have the same effect. But everyone on it's a class out. We know Ryan's a good and thoughtful writer, and we love Simon's colour work. And it's there's a really interesting palette, sort of flat colourish. So it's sort of somewhere between a sort of Brubaker and Phillips story and a Chris Ware story. You know, Chris Ware's got this sort of almost mathematical design to all of his pages. That's sort of clinical, but it's slightly messier than that. It's got and it's sort of slightly crime edgier than that. And I'd put it somewhere between the two. You could easily see it as a nice little image book, or it'd even cross over into perhaps Fantagraphics. We'll give it a go. It's got that sort of crossover appeal. But yeah, Skyscraper. Have a look for that one as well. There you go.
Nice one.
Yeah, Ryan's one of my favourite writers. I reckon his newsletter, you should sign up to that, because that's
quality. Yeah, a good one. Newsletter. Yeah.
And why isn't he writing for one of the bigger companies? I don't know.
But
he's a teacher, so he's doing something far more important.
Exactly.
Yeah. So there you go. What a bunch of fucking show notes I've got to put on the episode this week.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
But yeah, loads of fantastic recommendations there. Lots of different stuff you ought to check out, whether it be writing, artwork, comedy, whatever, or something that just makes Dan go, holy fuck.
Yeah.
There's something for everyone. And hopefully this episode was as well. So thank you very much for listening, and to our lovely guests again for joining us. They said before the show, I don't think I've ever spoken for 2 hours to anyone before, but do you see how easy it is?
Are you still, are we still talking?
They there.
Yeah, it was pretty, it was all right. It wasn't as painful as I thought it'd be. It was quite nice. Yeah,
well, there's a pool quote that's going to go on our homepage.
Not as painful as I expected. Yeah, not as painful as lower intestine sucked out by a swimming pool.
Yeah, I was going to go with anal, but you went worse here. That's fine.
Yeah. That's always your go-to, Tony. Anyway, we hope you enjoyed this week's episode and anything that we talked about. If there's any upcoming conventions, shows, comics, whatever, that you want us to know about, then email us awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Likewise, if we pronounce anyone's name wrong, just let us know. That's usually us that does that. But yeah, follow us on Twitter at the Awesome Pod, where you can find out. I mean, we haven't been that active the past couple of weeks, so we need to get on that. We've all been kind of busy with the day jobs, etc.
Yeah.
So yeah, just back off, man. but yeah, we got plenty more coming up. Also in the run up to 250, and. No, we don't know what we're going to do for that.
No, I've got to say again today, actually. We must decide.
Yeah. We'll just pull ideas out of a hat. No, that'd be terrible. That would be a terrible idea.
We're not doing that one again.
No, we're not doing that one again. if you do the Book of Faces, go to facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast. And if you're on Facebook, and then you should join the group Awesome Comics Talk. There's fantastic community on there that talks about making comics, comic events, just no hard selling, just great comics talk. If you want to talk more about anything we've discussed in this episode, get involved on the thread when we post up this episode. Even if you're just Dave Kennedy, just sort of say whoopee, a new episode's out, which he does every week. And thank you for listening to us, whether it's on the website awesomecomics.podbean.com. If you listen to us on iTunes, subscribe and leave a review, and generally just get the word out about the show, because we love you and we want you to love us. And if you listen to us on any of the networks like Spotify, Stitcher, Podnose, Podknife, what are the networks you're on, Tony?
Pod Mermaids Fannel.
Mermaids what? I was gonna leave. I was gonna leave an uncomfortable pause, but what?
Mermaids Flannel.
Flannel. I thought you said Fannel.
I was going to go with a pod. I turned to my left and it looked like a pensioner's veiny leg, but I thought that was a bit too rude.
Plus, that's a hell of a thing to put in your browser, isn't it?
Yeah, pensioner's veiny leg. Put that in there.
No, don't. Although I love the fact that I can take that bit of audio and use it against you.
Yeah, like every bit of audio you got on me.
Yeah.
Massive database. You were.
Yeah, but there's not that many people on the internet who look like me, unlike you.
We know Photoshop. Anyway, where can people find us online, on Twitter, etc.? Tony.
Neverironanything.blogspot.com. SOSEZOHYZ.
And what about, where can the people buy your comics?
Oh, you can buy things off me, can't you? Neverironanything.bigcartel.com. There you go.
Yeah. Dan?
You can find me on Twitter at Vanguard Comic, and I'm on, you can read Vanguard at vanguardcomic.com. If you want to buy any of the Vanguard books, they're all on Comic House now.
Yeah.
So go for it.
Yeah, it was quite aggressive the way you said that. So I definitely...
Yeah, it didn't mean it to come over that way. So if it did, I apologize. Yeah,
but it was, don't worry about it. Just be who you are, Dan. I'm not going to... and you can find me on social media at Jester Diablo, where I might post up some more artwork over the next few days.
Yeah, go for it.
We'll see. And to our lovely guests, Luke and Ben, where can they find you online, etc.?
Well, I think at Hawk and Cleaver is the main thing everywhere. My personal Twitter is at Luke of Condor with a K, KONDOR.
Yeah, so yeah, Hawk and Cleaver everywhere, at Hawk and Cleaver. Also on hawkandcleaver.com, there's everything on there, including the shop, where you can buy everything we do. Search the other stories and Horror Hangout on all your podcast apps, and me personally at Ben_Errington on Twitter.
Oh,
Nice.
There you go. That's where you can find us all.
Yeah.
So look for us online. Thank you for listening, everyone. Go forth. Pledge to the El Marvo Kickstarter when it comes out, because it is going to be a really good book.
Yes.
Yeah. And also, just buy loads of indie comics, read loads of comics, just have a great week. Stay healthy and safe. And from Dan, Tony, Luke, Ben and myself, have a brilliant week.
Also, go watch The Invisible Man. It's great.
Oh, yeah. I've heard that. Yeah, Dan's seen that as well.
It's good.
But I haven't seen it yet.
Hey.
Yeah, thanks.
Classic.
This is where we all say stay awesome. So get ready.
Ready?
Yeah, so have a brilliant week. Ignore my terrible jokes. And as always, what do they do?
Stay awesome.
He even planned it.
I gave you a really long lead in.
I don't know if we were allowed to join in or not.
You can join in if you want.
Don't make us do it again.
I'm not going to make you do it. You just have to live with the shame of what you've done. Bye, everyone.
See ya.
Bye.
Bye.